This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Israel's prime minister warns Congress against a nuclear deal with Iran. From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura, in for David Brancaccio. In just a few hours, Benjamin Netanyahu will address a joint session of Congress. Speaker of the House John Boehner invited him to make the speech, and the White House was not consulted. That has created some tension, but no one expects that'll have any effect on aid agreements worth billions of dollars between the U.S. and Israel. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
In 2007, the Bush administration agreed to give Israel $30 billion in military aid over 10 years. 75% of that money comes back to the U.S. Israel uses it to buy weapons systems from American defense contractors.
So it's everything from Hellfire missiles to airplanes.
That's Haim Malka, a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
U.S. aid to Israel accounts for about 20% of Israel's total defense budget.
The U.S. also gives Israel supplemental aid for things like its Iron Dome anti-rocket system. And the U.S. allows tax breaks for donations and investment in Israel, according to Avner Cohen, a professor at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies at Monterey.
U.S. funds invest in Israel annually roughly $1.5 billion.
The U.S. mainly gives Israel military aid. Non-military economic aid dried up as Israel's economy grew. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
There's a new report out today from the European Union on climate change and the environment. The good news is progress on reducing pollution has been significant. The bad news is that progress has also been insufficient. One line that stands out in the report is existing policies will not get the continent near its goals for reducing climate change risk. Dan Weissman is a reporter on Marketplace's sustainability desk. He's been going through the report. And Dan, what do you take away from this?
Europe is holding itself to a very tough standard. According to today's report from the European Environmental Agency, carbon emissions have dropped by 19% over the past 25 years, while the economy's grown a lot, and that's the good news. But the official goal is to bring those emissions down by 80% or more by 2050, and that is not on track at all. Current policies won't be enough to get there, neither will existing technological trends, and the real bad news is Europe's way ahead. According to the U.S. EPA, yeah, emissions from this country haven't really dropped in the last 25 years. And worldwide, it looks worse. Emissions are up by about 50%.
Do other countries have goals that are as ambitious as Europe's?
No. Here's one data point. The U.S. and China reached a deal last fall to reduce emissions. China's side was to stop increasing its emissions by 2030. That's a lot less aggressive than Europe's goal to go down 80% by 2050.
Marketplace's Dan Weissman, thanks.
Thanks, David.
And let's do the numbers. It's all red right now. The 100 share index in London is down about 0.1%, 7.63 points. And looking at pre-market trading, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down slightly. The Supreme Court hears arguments tomorrow in King versus Burwell. That is the latest legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act. At issue is whether the law allows the federal government to pay insurance subsidies to Americans who live in states that don't want to administer their own insurance marketplaces. Well, instead of following the money, we thought we would follow the subsidies. And Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein joins us now. He's on our health desk at WHYY. Hi, Dan.
Hey, David.
So this subsidy starts with the federal government.
That's right. It basically starts with the feds. And then when you go shopping online on the healthcare.gov federal exchange, based on the plan that you pick, you may be eligible, for example, for $150 subsidy, and the plan costs $300 a month in premiums. And so from there, the subsidy moves to the insurer. The insurer takes that $300 in and uses that to pay the providers, the hospitals and the doctors and nurses. And in many ways, you know, the subsidy is almost this driving force behind the government's effort to get more people insured.
I can only imagine that if these subsidies were to go away, that could potentially undermine the whole act, the Affordable Care Act.
There's no doubt. Lots of hand-wringing going on here. We're hearing a lot of people speculate just that thing. These figures are from the Kaiser Family Foundation, and they show that about 7.5 million Americans have purchased insurance in states that are using the federal exchange. And the government reports that about 87% of those folks are receiving subsidies. We're talking about covering about 72% of the monthly premium cost. If the court says that these 34 states are no longer eligible for subsidies, you could see people just saying this is way too expensive. Then, you know, young, healthy people are going to sort of drop out. That's going to force insurers to sort of jack up premiums here, forcing more people out. And that's what people in the industry like to call a death spiral.
Very dramatic. Okay, so if these subsidies were to go away, Dan, and again, we're not going to know if that's the case until a few months from now, late spring, maybe early summer, what could happen next?
If the court rules against the Affordable Care Act, there will be a tremendous amount of chaos. The administration has been clear. They have no backup plan in place. Republican senators say they do have a plan. As of right now, that plan is a little light on specifics, but it would include some sort of financial assistance for people who are currently receiving subsidies. And according to a recent op-ed in the Washington Post, the opportunity for states to create their own exchanges that would, quote, move our health system in the direction of freedom, choice, and lower costs.
All right, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, who will be at the Supreme Court tomorrow. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, David.
Finally, the British bank Barclays says it lost money last year because of how much it had to spend on fines and lawyers. In the U.S. and the U.K., investigations continue into allegations Barclays manipulated the foreign currency market. The bank reported a net loss of about $267 million. But despite that, the head of Barclays, its chief executive, Anthony Jenkins, decided he deserves a bonus. He's giving himself one worth more than $1.5 million. I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.